All right. Thanks to everyone that's involved in this call today. It's a little different situation, and this is our first time to have a board meeting in this format, and that's due to the relaxed rules that the governor has allowed during this about a 30-day period. It's a trial run to see how this will work for those entities that are required to follow the Open Meetings Act across the state. And so and we're taking advantage of the telephonic approach so that we can ensure the social distancing and protect everyone as much as we possibly can. So I'm going to go through and let you know how the board meeting will work, and then Dr. Freeman will call the meeting to order after I explain that. All right, as any board meeting, the chairman will call the meeting to order. We'll have a roll call, and each since we're not together and can see each other, we're going to do that by each board member expressing their presence as I call their name. Then we will, after Dr. Freeman has called the meeting to order, and again the roll call is taken, then we will go into two and three, which will require, that's going to be board activity, and it's for the board to discuss and to consider, and it's not for public participation or comment. And so we will go through two and three, and the board will take votes, if they so choose, on a resolution. And then we will move into the president's report, and I will give some information relative to the COVID-19 response. After we complete that, we will move into the section that is called communication to the board, which is what we have for at every board meeting. And the public has the opportunity at that point to address the board, and we do have some procedures that we always follow relative to that. If we were together in person, an individual would fill out a form, and then the instructions would, as far as how that particular portion of the meeting will work, is outlined, and then their name, and then that way we can include that as a part of the minutes. What we will do as a part of this call, for an individual who wishes to address the board, they will need to give their name so that we can record that, so we'll have that information. Otherwise, others that are listening will be able to just do so and have the opportunity to take advantage of this format. So when we get past the communication to the board, then Dr. Freeman will close the board meeting, and since this is a special emergency meeting, the agenda items are focused totally on this emergency matter. And so at the conclusion of the meeting, he will declare it adjourned. So Dr. Freeman, having said that, and Dr. Freeman is here with me, would you like to call the meeting to order?
Thanks, Dr. Sparks. I call this meeting to order. As required by state law, this meeting is open to the public, but by telephonic communications. The college is complying with the suspended proceedings of the Open Meetings Act in accordance with Section 418.016 of the Texas Government Code. Members of the public are entitled to participate and address the college through remote connection. In accordance with the Texas Government Code, Section 551.045, an emergency or urgent public necessity exists that requires immediate action of the board, or an imminent threat to public health, safety, or reasonable, unforeseeable situation exists. Following the March 13, 2020 declaration of emergency regarding the COVID-19 epidemic by the governor of the state of Texas and the president of the United States. At this time, I'd like to ask Dr. Sparks to take over the meeting and to proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Freeman. And what I will do, so that we can have this for the record, I will do a quick roll call, and I will call each board member, and if you will reply with your presence, Maxwell Barr.
Here.
Okay, thank you. All right, if you, then Patricia Bennett. Patricia, we know you're there. Just do your command, the command. We'll go on to the next person. Adrian Calvio.
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay.
Dr. Sparks, I'm here. It's Patricia.
Okay, great. All right. Michael Flores. Michael was literally having trouble with his phone. He called me earlier, so he may not be on the line. Michael, are you there? All right. Let's go forward. Dr. Freeman.
I'm here.
Emma Crable. Emma, are you there? Okay. I do expect her to be joining us, so she may be running late. Mark Morgan.
I'm here.
All right. Dr. Freeman and board members, with your direction, Dr. Freeman, I'll go ahead and move into the second agenda item, which is the resolution to authorize delegation of authority to the president during altered operations for COVID-19. As you know, and you received a document relative to an overview of what this resolution is about. What this is about is a resolution that gives certain delegations of authority to the president in order to efficiently and effectively prepare the college district in response to the declarations of emergency announced by the United States, the state of Texas, surrounding cities and counties of the service area, as well as any preparation for any additional declarations of emergency. And, of course, we know that these have been happening for the last couple of weeks. The background of this, our top priority is the safety of our students and employees and certainly our communities as well. And so in order to be able to facilitate as a main goal the continuance of operations in an altered operational format, allowing students to remain on track to meet their learning objectives and complete their studies has been our primary effort. Retention of full-time and part-time employees, reduction in turnover, maintaining morale, and facilitating the future return to normal operations are also top strategic objectives. As is obvious, and I will make the point that in existing board policy, you already give me broad authority to make decisions, but because of what is happening, we have such a changing format, we are sometimes having to make decisions outside of our normal method of operations and in a time frame that's outside of the college's normal pattern, because again, it may be in between board meetings and we have situations that literally are happening sometimes by the hour. What this resolution will allow is it will delegate to the president the authority to act for the board in various areas, such as including scheduling of work and payments to employees in this altered operation status, alteration to the 2019-2020 calendar, which you already approved probably a year ago, ability to seek waivers from various agencies, and ability to procure needed items above the president's normal threshold. This delegation is sought to facilitate the efficient and effective utilization of resources available to the college to maintain operations in an altered manner. This particular resolution does not have any specific budget implications, and there will be required monitoring with this. We'll have the responsibility to provide timely and reasonable information to the Board of Trustees with regard to decisions made pursuant to the resolution. So that's kind of an overview of the purpose of the resolution. When you look at the resolution, and I would also, board members, you have this in your board book, and anyone that may have called in, these documents are available on the website, or if you'll look at the agenda from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, you can also go to the link that we have provided, and it is available. These documents are available for your viewing as you're listening to this audio portion of the meeting. And so, board members, again, you have this overview provided to you, as well as the resolution itself. The resolution is lengthy, and basically it goes through all the different, and I'm not sure that we have picked up every one. There have been so many different declarations. President Trump has taken some, our governor, of course, our county judges in the local areas, the mayors. There's just many emergency status declarations that are taking place, which then result in different actions having to be taken. And due to the fact that the college's service area, of course, Howard County, but then we have our 12 other counties as well as a part of our service area. So we are trying to stay attuned to what is happening in all of our areas. And, of course, we have our campuses in La Mesa and San Angelo, and then in Big Spring we have the SWID and the Big Spring campuses. And so we find ourselves monitoring throughout the service area as well as the school districts that we serve. We, as you know, we work with several of the school districts with that, well, all of the school districts within that 13-county service area, and so we are trying to keep up with all that, and it does make an impact on some of the decisions that we're making, because sometimes those situations can be different depending on the communities. And as we move forward, we could see that happening more if we have a spread of COVID-19. So this resolution that you have in front of you, I want to share that we have the Texas Association of Community Colleges is meeting almost daily, statewide telephonic meetings in order to keep up with what's going on across the state and actions that are being taken by various boards in response to what is happening in their particular area. And what we have found, unfortunately for our colleagues in the Houston and Dallas and San Antonio and Austin areas, they are ahead of many of us. And so some of those actions that are being taken in those areas are providing guidance for the rest of us as we begin to see the confirmed cases sprouting up around the state. And so we actually have modeled this resolution after the one that was passed by San Jacinto Community College District, as provided by Chancellor Brenda Hellyer, as well as another one, McClellan College, also shared theirs, as provided by President Johnette McCowan. And the San Jacinto resolution was reviewed by the attorney. That's the main one that we followed, as well as McLennan, and many of the college districts have used this model. And so, again, to just reiterate, we're sharing documents and information during this time of crisis so that we can all move very quickly. So, again, as I mentioned, with adoption of this resolution, the the requirement will be that I will also be giving you reports on the status of actions that are being taken, that in some instances, and just like the report we'll share today, would be actions that I would be able to normally be able to take, but some of the actions would be ones that I would generally bring to the board meeting and have you approve them. And so it will give us the opportunity as a institution to move as nimbly as we can as we respond to what is happening in the service area. So, Mr. Chairman, if you would like to call for a motion.
Thank you, Dr. Sparks. I would like to call for a motion to your preference. I'm going to need a motion and a second. So I would I need a motion from one of the board members, please.
This is Mark. I would move that we adopt the resolution.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. Thank you. All in favor, say yes.
All right.
Run a roll call, please.
Yeah, I'll do a roll call again. All right. Max Barr?
Yes.
Patricia Bennett?
Yes.
Adrian Calvio?
Yes.
Michael Flores, have you been able to join? Dr. Freeman?
Yes.
Emma Craybill? Mark Morgan?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion is approved, so we will now turn it back over to Dr. Sparks. Further response for the COVID-19 virus.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Freeman. Board members, again, if you will look at the documents that have been provided to you, and these are all quite lengthy, and I'm going to try to just hit the high points as much as possible. But the first document that you have, the response to COVID-19, this is essentially the strategic plan that we created on the fly, I will say, based on how things were moving so quickly. And I also want to give credit again to Brenda Hellyer as the Chancellor of SANJAC. They put together some things that were very useful for all of us to consider as we were moving into this these different levels of response. And so first you'll see what our strategic objectives were, and I will just tell you, kind of starting off with, and you will notice on the second page, ongoing information inflows and participation, that was a part of this original strategic plan. Our efforts actually started back in, we've been hearing about the coronavirus for a while, all of us. And as the concerns began to increase across our world for the different reasons we know, we started seeing efforts ramping up at our national level as well as our state level. And so beginning in January, our communicable diseases co-chairs, and we have one on both our Big Spring and San Angelo campuses, they started monitoring the COVID-19 concern and sharing information with district employees about recommended guidelines. And this was, coordinating board was guiding and providing information for us to use. And so we were getting that information out. At the same time, we also have an emergency management team, and we have an individual on the Big Spring and San Angelo campuses, and actually all of our campuses, that started, as well as the cabinet, that were also monitoring the situation at the local, state, national, and global levels, and participating in local meetings as convened. And so essentially we were all in a preparation mode, and you'll note as we move into the document, essentially we were in what was going to be stage one of this operation, and it is essentially based on no confirmed cases in the college service area. And so as we were seeing cases popping up in the United States and concerns were beginning to happen across our country, the Monday of March 9th, communicable diseases co-chairs and emergency management leaders started participating in daily calls with the Texas Department of Health Services, who were providing daily updates to colleges, school districts, city, county authorities. And so we had interchangeable participation in those calls and providing summaries. As most of us know, that particular week seemed to be where we were beginning to see concerns growing, and so we were being very vigilant on what was happening across our state, country, and it became apparent by Thursday, March 12th, that additional action needed to be taken as confirmed cases were growing. And so on that Thursday, we pulled together a COVID-19 response team that was activated with several members across our college district, and they're listed for you there. And we tried to have a broad representation so that we could ensure that we were meeting the needs of the students and employees and communities throughout our service area. And we had our first meeting was on the evening of March 12th. And that is really, in that meeting is when some of these basic strategic objectives began to come together, and they would continue to gel over the next few days, as well as, again, giving full credit to Dr. Hellyer for the information she shared, and it gave us a good starting point. And so from that point then, those objectives, and I'll take you back to those strategic objectives that are in this document. So what are our strategic objectives in this entire COVID-19 response? To protect the health and safety of our students, employees, and communities, to be prepared to begin completing the spring semester through online, hybrid, and alternate classwork, depending on the type of course, and make up 1 week of lost instruction time if possible. That was our original goal, to keep students on track for completion through student services, to enable the majority of the college employees to work remotely while continuing to provide necessary services with some working on campus, to retain full-time and part-time employees, reduce turnover, increase morale, help employees focus on work, and facilitate future return to normal operations, and to keep our communities informed. So those were our guiding principles, strategic objectives from the beginning. And then we had sections that we were going to focus on. We were going to have ongoing external inputs so that we could have information inflows and participation through our communities, through different groups that would be meeting, internal groups that we'd be meeting, and of course just individuals that might be providing information. And so we had an initial list of individuals, entities that we were going to be keeping involved with, reaching out to, and made those as part of the strategic plan. And those are listed. We'll go over all those, but you can see there it was a broad group. And then we also, because of where we found ourselves on that Thursday night, and then by Sunday, again, we kept monitoring, and by Sunday night, it was obvious that we needed we were ramping up, we were keeping in communication over the weekend, and it was obvious we needed to get together again on Sunday night. So we had another meeting, another telephonic meeting, and kept formulating our plan. And so this first strategic plan, you'll see, our goals for that week of March 16th through the 20th, because we were going to report back at that point in time the concerns of, about gathering. They were not as strong as they started to unfold over the next few days. And so our intent was to return to campus on March 16th, and our campuses were to be open. But at the same time, we made the decision and had made the decision the following Thursday before to get word out to our students who would be traveling, because we did have some students that that are a part of our college campuses that live literally all over the campus, all over the country, and in some instances even foreign students. And so we wanted to begin to reach out to those students and let them know, so that if, as we were seeing this all rapidly changing, we didn't want them to be in transit and decisions have to be made. And so we went ahead and took some actions at that point and released that information to students. And then as we, as employees, we were going down the path that we would then take that week that the students' spring break was extended, and we would use that week as a time to prop up and get ready for what we could see was coming, and that was going to be an online format, and trying to do everything we could to get ready for that, with things changing on a daily basis. And so you can see we had some broad points that we were going to be working on, and I'll go through those as we move to the next document. But we knew that we'd be working on each campus, between campuses, with our school districts, and there was a lot of effort that was going to take place. Same thing, we had plans for our college service divisions, things that they could start working on, and those individuals would be spending time on preparing, and we were again trying to keep in full operation, campuses open, fitness center open on the Big Spring campus, as well as the child care center, Howard Cottage, and we were ready to go on Monday, March 16th. At the same time, we had other things that were happening, and we talked about the fact that there were already declaration of emergencies that were beginning to happen, and those were beginning, and actions were being taken at the state level that were beginning to change up operations, and we could see that there were some things that could start happening, as well as not knowing what we were going to be facing, having to begin thinking about would we have some additional expenditures that we might need to make. And so we were being cognizant of that, and at the same time knowing that there were going to be, we were going to have questions about how our accrediting bodies were going to respond if we altered how we approach things, because there are strict guidelines for several of our programs, as well as coordinating board rules, SAC COC requirements, and so we knew that there were going to be some concerns that we were going to have to address as we were moving into that planning stage. We were not alone. These were the kinds of things that were going on all over the state. But at that point in time, we were all operating somewhat independently. We had a plan. The Texas Association of Community Colleges had a plan to convene us on Tuesday the 17th. But at that point, because it was happening at various levels of acceleration due to what was going on with communities, people were planning in different stages. And so we also talked about there could be some specialized purchases and kind of talked about some of those. We knew that we needed to maintain workforce stability. There was going to be a lot of questions, people dealing with different scenarios in their lives, and we had people that were traveling, and people that had we had students who had traveled, as well as employees, and we were trying to monitor what was happening based on what the federal government decisions, decisions were being made, and trying to monitor all of that. And so those were all, again, foundational. We were thinking about our different student groups and specific needs they were going to be having, and knowing that we also had projects and contractors that had need to do certain things on our different campuses, and so we were trying to keep that in mind. And we knew we had upcoming decisions, not knowing at that point exactly where some things were going to go. We knew we were moving into what is the one of, if not the busiest time of the year, and that is after spring break. We move into all of our awards convocations, final presentations, music recitals, plays, graduation ceremonies, and all those kinds of things, and a very active athletic season. And so we knew that we were going to have to be keeping up with all of those, and budget was coming, and the election, summer, fall registration, all kinds of things that were on the horizon. We knew that there were some board actions and decisions as that week, that first week, was unfolding, and the governor was taking actions, and the president was taking actions. We knew that we were going to have to start thinking about how would you meet as a board, and the governor did come out with his relaxing of the guidelines relative to the Open Meetings Act, which would allow you all to be able to meet in different formats. And of course, we've been seeing those kinds of changes in public entity meetings across that service area as people have been trying to respond to the restrictions that we have, and first and foremost, maintaining the safety and health of everyone. And then again, that week, it became apparent that with what was happening down in the Houston areas and Dallas and all, that they were beginning to move into these resolutions. Boards were taking action on resolutions, and so we started working on that, anticipating that we could find ourselves in a similar situation. You'll see as the last page of our strategic plan something that we say at Howard College, and it's just kind of a little saying that we have, and that is, tough times don't last, tough community colleges do. And we have weathered storms for many years, and have used this kind of as our a motto, whatever you want to say, to spur us on and keep us moving as things are changing. And then we always say, hawks fly together. And so I want to give credit to Cindy Smith for putting together these documents that show the branding of Howard College. And you know, on the front page is our hawk, and it has a fierce look, determined look. And that was the way that we began our strategic plan. So then, Mr. Chairman and board members, I would move in to the COVID-19 response status number one. I wanted to go ahead and prepare your first report with some of the things that were happening with my, again, the current authority that you provide, but then also, quite frankly, had taken actions that needed to be taken to keep us moving forward. And I want to go ahead and report on those so that you have that information. As a part of that resolution that you passed moments ago, the requirement then is you will get the status reports as long as we're in this altered operation status. And to also clarify, at the point that we are complete with this altered operation status, then the authority that you gave me earlier, that will be rescinded. We'll go back into normal operations, and we will manage the college district in the way that we do on a normal basis. So until that time, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to act as we need to make decisions, and I want to give credit also to the COVID response team and all of our college community that are assisting me in making these decisions and providing input and guidance as to what they're hearing and seeing and what we need to do in order to be able to serve our students and our communities and employees. And so if you're having the opportunity to look at your document, and you will see essentially, and again, I have spent a lot of time looking at what other colleges are doing and just trying to make sure that we're staying on top of any great idea that's out there. And I want to give credit to Emerald College. They had different stages that they were utilizing, and I thought that made sense, like that idea. So we incorporated that, and basically we have found ourselves for the last couple of months in stage one, which is when there are no confirmed cases in the college service area. So it's a time of preparing and ramping up and adjusting, and we have been in a scenario that sometimes we are pulled in with actions that are taken at the state or national level. We're moved into another stage of response because it's in the best interest of the state or the nation as a whole. And so I think that, again, is why we have seen our governor and our president making sometimes struggling with how to approach what to do, because different parts of the state or the country are experiencing the COVID-19 confirmations at a slower pace, if not at all. And so we have operated in stage one up until March 24th. And we moved into stage two on that day with our first report of confirmed COVID-19 in our service area, and it was in our San Angelo community. And as of this afternoon, we now, unless there's something else that's popped up, and we tried to keep this as current as possible, so we just hot off the press, as of about 3 o'clock this afternoon, what we're aware of, we now have 5 cases, 3 in San Angelo. The last one today that has been confirmed is due to community spread. And community spread, as you know, is not due to exposure to somebody confirmed or to travel. So this makes it different, and already we are beginning to see our community of San Angelo increasing its urgings to the community. And that's a prime example of how we may begin to have to react differently as our different communities are having different scenarios. So we have, again, the 3 in San Angelo. As of yesterday, we have a confirmed case in Dawson County where our La Mesa campus is located, and we also have a confirmed case in Martin County where we also serve several the school districts of that county. And so that essentially then moved us into stage two. But having, again, the fact that we've been operating mainly in stage one, we have been continuing as we strategically planned to get our information inflows, participating in every meeting that we can, planning as appropriate. And that first page is essentially, I kind of gave you the overview of that, but all of those efforts have continued, and we also, the Howard County Emergency Management Group has been meeting. We hosted the first one in person, and after the situation kept evolving, now they have moved to telephonic, and we're using one of the college conference lines to facilitate that for our community. And then also Representative Darby has been participating by phone. And so there's been a lot of activity. I would tell you that the statewide call that the Texas Association of Community Colleges started on March 17th, they've been almost daily until this week. We have changed the format up just a tad. But those calls have included representatives from the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office. We've had legislators, staff members from higher ed. Coordinating board is on every call. We've had different state representatives, other state leaders that have participated. So there's been a lot of good inflow. And what is happening in the community colleges are being able, it's basically a call where people that have action items, we start with action items from the meeting before, and those are reported on, information that we have been able to get answers on. And then we move into, as a last part of the meeting, and the meetings generally last about an hour, we move into colleges across the state asking questions, sharing what they're running into, challenges, sharing information, and as a result, we're sharing documents so that we can all help each other as we all move through this scenario. So that's been a very helpful, and of course, we're working with our school districts and our communities, and then internally, we're having our regular COVID-19 response team meetings, cabinet meetings, other group meetings, and taking advantage of all that. As a part of the strategic plan, we kind of divided it up into, we were going to have instructional planning that was going to need to happen, as I shared previously, as well as student service kind of planning. And I want to just quickly go over some of this. I know it's right there in its, you have it in your document, but I want to focus on this because I am so very, very proud of our college district and all the effort that people have been making, and they have just done a fantastic job. And it's not always been easy. People are doing things remotely because after the president made his decision on the 16th, on the 15-day stop the spread, we took action then for the campuses to close and for the employees to work from home as much as possible, and we started changing our format. So they have been, sometimes it's not easy. They're doing things electronically or remotely. They are not always able to access documents that would be right at their fingertips if they were in their offices, and so people have really been juggling. The faculty, the week of 16th through the 20th, they transitioned all courses, and we had many that were already online, but they transitioned all courses that they could to an online digital format in order to go live by March 20. They had it, and we were going to go live on March 23rd, and they had it done by the end of the week. There was a lot of activity on that, and I want to move to the next point. Our health professions programs, they had unique challenges because, as you know, our health professions programs, they have requirements that are guidelines provided by their accrediting bodies and then also by coordinating board rules as far as how those particular courses are designed. And so they were having to consider how can we get in the clinical aspects of these programs that require being at hospitals and different medical facilities. And so they started working on that. We began to have hospitals restricting entrance, and we understood that through our service area. But I want to give a special thank you to Scenic Mountain and the VA in Big Spring and Shannon Medical Center and San Angelo Community Medical Center in San Angelo. They allowed our students to go in and maintain clinical rotations, and they were doing things around the clock, and our faculty were helping the students as well as preceptors as we tried to race as quickly as we could to get in the clinical hours that would be required for the programs. Nursing homes restricted access, we know why, and so that created some challenges for some of our other allied health programs, and we had to start adjusting those and how were we going to address the hours required for them. Other health entities, we were having, like for our EMS students, in order to be able to go out on rides, that was difficult. Some of those guidelines or restrictions were being placed, and so our faculty were just trying to work in as innovative and creative ways as they could, so that we could get our students graduated on time. The weekend of March 20, the governor, and I will tell you, I truly believe that some of the actions that the governor took over that weekend were a result of those TAC calls that we had already started on Tuesday, because we immediately were sharing our concerns about our student nurses being able to get into hospitals for clinicals and the restrictions that we had relative to Board of Nursing has certain guidelines. And so over the weekend, the governor issued some directions to relax some of those guidelines. And part of that reasoning was to get those first responder students out of their programs and into the workforce as quickly as possible. Also, NCLEX testing for nurses, that is another action that's being taken across the nation to provide opportunities for student nurses upon graduation to test, having more options to do so. Dental hygiene, that was more of a challenge, because we know that with dental hygiene we have our clinicals, but those students are going to be working on cleaning people's teeth, and we of course had concerns about that, as well as the guidelines of the dental hygiene program. So they had to get very creative, and they worked online. They used Zoom for classrooms or for classroom work. And at this point, the clinicals will not be held until April 21st. That's, again, following the mandates from the governor. And it's possible it could even be summer before clinical hours can be completed for that program. And the dental hygiene clinical boards have been postponed. So the dental hygiene world is having to work through their own challenges. But again, every effort was being made to keep these students, and some of these students were actually moved. They were, even though we had extended the spring break, these students were actually doing clinicals in order to move and keep racing against not knowing what we had ahead of us. Otherwise, we had our faculty across the district participating in professional development. We have e-trainers that are already in place for our different campuses, and they have provided training before, but they certainly went into high gear. And we had experienced faculty that started helping others who did not have the familiarity with online format as to the degree that others had. And so people were working together, collaborating, and coming up with innovations that would work for different courses, because every course had its challenges for different reasons, trying to make sure that we were getting across the student learning objectives that would be needed. Some of our biggest challenge was how to handle those courses with hands-on training, such as welding, HVAC, building construction, cosmetology. And so those faculty members were having to consider, how do we handle this? And we came up with a plan to begin delivering those opportunities in small groups by March 30. That was the plan in the beginning of that week. But as actions started happening over the week, and by the end of the week, the governor had taken his actions on Thursday that ended up having the schools and colleges closing as far as being on campus. And so that changed our thought process on how were we going to be able to do that. And even though we were thinking about doing small groups, even working with some of the students in groups smaller than 10, we still were having some challenges, and we wanted to make sure at all times that we were focusing on the health and safety of everyone. And so as time has advanced, extensions of some courses for a few weeks may be the better solution, and we're listening to what is happening in those urban areas that are in, again, a different stage of this than we are. And as we're listening, that's what many of them are beginning to do. As I said, on March 20, our faculty they were ready. And the plan for each course was posted on our website, and an alert was sent to all students to check the online format for their schedule. Again, I want to thank our folks in e-learning and information for all their efforts to be prepared to get that up there. And we had that information ready for students, and they could go and they could look at each one of their courses. That was also helpful for our dual credit school districts, so that they would know. We were conferring with them, but every student that we were serving would be able to see how that particular course of mine is going to be handled. And so that was up there. Links to resources were added to Blackboard, which is our learning management system. And want to give a credit to Kim Clark and her team for all their efforts to prepare and help our faculty as we were moving into this online digital format. Lots of activity there. And I can tell you, had we not been as prepared because of the efforts of Kim and team over all these years, it would have been even more difficult. But they were ready, and we were able to move quickly. We also, as you know, we have our correctional facilities that we serve at the FCI, as well as the private prisons through GO. And we needed to work with those entities, and we have done so, trying to figure out the best instructional delivery, and have responded as they've made decisions, and at the same time always wanting to maintain the safety and health of our faculty. We created a faculty resources page for faculty that were transitioning to online instruction. So that was an effort of all faculty, and again, I give credit to all of those involved with that. Our libraries, they were very active. They have always had a very robust, in recent years, they have had robust online services available to students and faculty, but they broadened what they were doing and developed interactive databases for faculty to use with various courses. So there was lots of activity, and that continues, and it has continued through this week. You notice that I put March 23rd to 27th, because although we were ready to go live on Monday this past week, we still, it's evolving every day. People are working every day to keep enhancing the experience for our students. Of concern for our college service department areas is how we were going to go live on Monday. We also knew we had to get our students engaged. Some of our students are very familiar with online format. They have taken online courses for a long time. Some people are very uncomfortable with them, and we knew that this was going to be a transition time. And so lots of thought has been taken into how are we going to help our students, what kinds of services can we provide them. So we've had Facebook Live sessions multiple times each week to provide assistance, encouragement, support, et cetera, for students. We've added a communication at Howard College email address to field questions, needs. We've created a web page, a resource for COVID-19. We have been assessing student technology needs through online form, providing laptops and other equipment, helping with internet service challenges across the service area in all 13 counties. We've been monitoring student engagement in courses. Faculty and advisors have been trying to monitor. We can tell when students log in. And so we are being able, we've been watching that, giving students the opportunity to begin logging in, getting ready, and then faculty and advisors are calling them to encourage if they need to get to work and trying to, if they have problems, and just trying to assist our students. HC alerts are being utilized to inform students and employees of important information. We're implementing a chat bot texting system that will communicate with students in real time. Students will be able, basically person or a chat bot will answer. The student can ask a question. The chat bot will respond to the question, give an answer, and it has an algorithm to work through that as far as how those questions or answers are provided. We still have some students that are living with us. We were changing our approaches with students returning to the residence halls throughout this entire 2 weeks. And for the students that are still on campus, we are providing takeout meals to them. We've been mailing items to students at their homes, those that are from all over the country. Many of our SWIS students, they're from all over the country, as well as our Big Spring campus. We have students that are from other parts of the nation, and so we've been mailing items to students, assisting students with travel arrangements and needs as they have been challenged because, again, different scenarios have been happening because students, at the beginning, we thought we were going to have an athletic season, and decisions were being made, and students were working their way back, and then we began to see actions taken at the NJCAA rule level as well as NRA, and so that was impacting students. We've been reaching out to our dual credit schools to ensure connection with students and counselors, and making sure that we're addressing the instructional formats needed. We're reaching out to our student leaders to assist us with communicating with student body to address questions, concerns, and needs. We're offering virtual tutoring using Upswing, Zoom, Skype, and video phones. We're forwarding phone lines in order to respond to student calls. Planning is underway for updates and encouragement for students from the president in different formats. Accommodation needs for students changing to the online format or being analyzed and addressed, and our ADA lead for the college district has been sending out information on different information on accommodation approaches as our faculty have been moving to the online format. We've been using jump drives that can be, in some instances, students are so remote that they don't have good access, internet access, and so this was an innovative idea They've faculty have been using jump drives to get to mail to a student, sending information, student mailing it back, and we're trying to, again, another innovation. We're providing options for students to access food and personal hygiene pantries through appointment. Remote Wi-Fi access points in areas such as Ackerley, Garden City, Cahoma, and Sand Springs are being offered by West Tex, and I want to thank them for their efforts during this time. They've assisted us in many ways. And I might also add that we also are encouraging students to know that our campuses can serve as hotspots, and they can literally get into parking lots and be able to access if they're having problems. We also were providing online mental health counseling for students that were already having counseling, and in a few instances we have started some mental health counseling that is being provided online. We have been working on our residence hall rules in relation to social distancing and visitors in order to keep our students as safe as possible. Libraries are sharing tips for students in social media formats. So lots of activity. Again, you can tell the instructional and service areas of our college district have just been doing a phenomenal job in trying to just, again, come up with all these different approaches. So, again, I just can't thank them enough. Outstanding job. Identification of specialized purchases. Just a minute. As we have been working through the last couple of weeks, there are different purchases that we've needed in my mind. We've been looking at them. Laptops, cellular Wi-Fi, other mobile computing devices, additional software licensing support, expanding conferencing capability. We can increase the number of reports, as well as contracting for toll-free numbers for public meetings, Zoom meetings, expanded go-to meeting capacity for participants, online virtual simulation for some programs. The declarations that the president and the governor have made have resulted in us being able to do some things in formats. And so, again, we've already kind of touched on some of those already. And then we're seeing tremendous support from our crediting body, SAC-CLC, the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. Everyone is working together. The Office of the Governor, they are responding quickly. We're just seeing there's so much teamwork that is going on through all these different areas. So stage one actions have included all of those things. I've touched on some of the things, but I want to go ahead and report some of the things that, again, would be something that might be out of my normal operations, so that you'll know. We increased efforts to clean and disinfect spaces, leaving the buildings ready for return. Our district maintenance staff did that. And also, efforts were increased to increase supplies for all locations. And then we've already talked about the decisions that were made on March 12th, so I won't go over those again. As you know, decisions would be made, then we would need to have, we'd have to change what we were going to do. We changed those decisions, and again, we were just responding almost on a daily, and literally one day it was, we changed our operational approach in, I think, within about 2 hours. And we had made decisions earlier in the afternoon, and we changed them as a result of President Trump's action and to move into that 15-day effort. And so those are the kinds of altered operations that the college has always been open But we have had, as this has been unfolding, we've been altering operations, and so you're aware of that. We had to make the decision to close the fitness center on Tuesday, March 17th, again, out of an abundance of caution. At that point, by the end of the week, the governor that was included in his actions, Howard Cottage was kept open until Wednesday, March 18th, to give parents time to make other arrangements. That was a difficult decision to make, but it was out of an abundance of caution for all, not knowing exactly what the scenarios were at that point in time. We've talked about the strategic planning that was going on. We know what happened on Thursday, March 19th, with Governor Abbott's action, and that then extended what our original plan had been, which was March 30. We were going to try to be moving back into a normal operation status, but that extended that until April the 3rd. So in the meantime, NJCAA was making decisions, NRA was making decisions, excuse me, and we were working with our students, as I've already mentioned. One of the restrictions that the NJCAA placed on the sports department was that there could be no face-to-face recruiting until April the 15th, and although virtual was allowed. So we took the stance that we would do that for all of our recruiting, and so that's what we've been doing. We started canceling activities. We started seeing local, state, and national meetings and conferences being canceled. We limited college travel to service area only. We adjusted guidance to students regarding residence halls as the situation has evolved. We changed the drop date to April the 24th. As I mentioned, we expanded our opportunity to host as many people as possible on different calls and worked on getting the toll-free number in order for you to be able to meet telephonically, getting a 500 caller capability. Although we've never had 500 people attend a board meeting, we wanted to make sure that we had as much capacity as possible so that we could keep our public informed. We canceled the March 23rd regular Board of Trustees meeting with a plan to consider those items at a later date. We expanded the go-to meeting capability for 250 participants that could be used in some formats for campuses. FCI has locked down for 30 days, which has resulted in our FCI faculty are not they are not reporting for work on site. They are working on their programs remotely as well. GO facilities are making different decisions at each facility, and we're responding to those as they take those actions. Yesterday we had a self-report of an employee exposed to a confirmed case of COVID-19. As a result of that, and following the guidelines that we could find relative to what you do in a situation like that, even though that person does not have a confirmed case, but it is an exposure, you are guided to follow the procedures you would take if it was a confirmed case. And so that's what we've done. We've informed. We did an investigation. Who could have been impacted? Those employees have been. They have been informed, and the. The self-report, as well as the employees that had potential exposure, if that one ends up being confirmed, they've also gone into the 14-day quarantine. And we closed our campus yesterday. We got the word out to our campus, started doing that on Wednesday night. And so that we could ensure by Thursday morning we would not have anyone on campus, and we closed our doors, locked, made sure that everything was secure, and the reason being, as a part of the actions you're to take, you are supposed to secure the building for at least 24 hours. And so we made the decision to do that, of course, following those guidelines, but because of where we were in the week, in an abundance of caution for our maintenance people who will be cleaning, we wanted to give additional time, having read how it will, the germ can stay on different surfaces for different lengths of time. We wanted to make sure that we were past any kind of concerns. And so on Monday, they will go into the affected buildings and they will disinfect according to procedures and using the appropriate PPE to do that task. And we also want to be transparent and provide information to employees, students, and so we also shared that information with media so that we could get the word out. And then we're going down the path of seeking the major resolution delegation today, and so those have been stage one actions. Upcoming decisions, so that you'll know what we anticipate that we are going to be challenged with over the next few days, hours. We will respond to national, state, and local actions as they're taken. Transitional decisions are needed as we're moving into stage two with the reported cases in our service area, and certainly this afternoon with the community spread that creates a different thought process for our San Angelo campus, as well as what our travel between campuses. We are being instructed to, we are to prepare items on the LBB. Legislative Budget Board has a survey request requesting related expenditures to COVID-19 and estimated lost revenue for fiscal year 2020. We have, although we have postponed in many of our campus events, hoping that maybe we would be able to, toward the end, to have those events, we're going to have to start moving into determination of final cancellation. We still have been trying to hold off on our health professions pinnings and commencement, and that final decision is going to have to be made. Howard Cottage, we are considering reopening for student, parents, and faculty serving in first responder roles, trying to be sensitive to what's happening for those. And so we're thinking about that, how we could do that. We are going to have to be thinking about time frame to resume normal operations as information is available. We're going to have to make a decision on extension of registration for summer and fall. We're going to have to decide periodic needs for employees to return to campus and get more strategic about that as we are having different scenarios happen in our service area. Our registration schedules. We have to, of course, be responding to students, our contractors who are delivering services, construction that we have going on even, our federal work-study students who are working with what we need to do there, finalizing compensation plans relative to how we work during this offered operations, purchasing of resources to support students, our operations during the altered status, our approach to the 2021 budget and ongoing projects. This will be an item for sure, trustee election, that will be one that I will not take, but you as a board will have the need to consider. At the current time, as you know, you have a board election on May the 2nd. The governor took action allowing the different entities in the state who wanted to delay the May election to the November election. He provided the authority to do so. He didn't have the ability to mandate it. He did take that action on some of the other elections that we had going on, and of course those have been reported in the media. and I believe those are going to be in July. But you as a board are going to need to consider that. I will tell you that locally, as far as Howard County, where the election for the Board of Trustees would be held, and again, we're a countywide election process. The entities are all have all been considering how to approach this, and I know that all of our initial thoughts were that we would be going forward with a May election. As things keep evolving, those decisions are still being considered. We know that the city of Big Spring started that conversation again and are considering how to proceed. And so likely we will find ourselves having to consider something. We do have the ability for each entity to make its own decision about whether it will have the election in May or go to the November election. But I will tell you that in working with our elections administrator, Jody Duck, she went ahead, prepared the ballot so the ballots could be ready, and she has those ready. But in visiting with her, those decisions need to be made as soon as possible and certainly prior to when early voting starts, which is on April the 20th, I believe. And so we need to, let me check that. Yes, April the 20th. And so those kinds of decisions will need to be made. And again, that would not be a decision. I do not believe that's in this authority you have given me. And also, the governor has, as a part of that action that he took, said that it requires action of the board. And so that will be something for you to consider. So we will have to get at some point. We'll see how things proceed over the next few days. The instructional mode for mini and summer sessions will need to be decided. Tuition and fees, refund or credit request, refund or credits request related to room and board, consideration of incomplete and or pass-fail options that are being discussed at the state level, responding to needs of students located in remote areas without robust internet, completion of CTE course requirements deemed difficult to accomplish virtually, completion of health professions program requirements in some fields if COVID-19 spreads in the service area, focusing on cybersecurity as advancement of virtual remote altered operations continues, potential actions being taken at the state level impacting budgets as economy is being strained, increasing simulation is needed, working with donors interested in providing support for students, employees struggling, determination of essential services positions required to be on campus in the event stay-at-home measures are mandated. This is something that entities across the state are struggling with, and determinations are being made, and this is another part of the conference call, the TAC call, Texas Association of Community Colleges, that we are discussing as some of those are already in those stay-at-home type mandates, and so we're all having to manage through that. Updating of our continuity plan, inventory of potential items that could be used for the medical community if needed from our college campuses, completion of state reports within extended deadlines, and some of those have been extended. But in some instances, the difficulty of responding to some of those from home when you do have documents that are in your office and how you work through some of those stay-at-home mandates if we find ourselves moving into that, and adjusting budget due to reduced revenue if necessary. And so those are, again, decisions that have been, again, that have been made. Upcoming decisions with the authority you've given me, We will be, as a college community team, we will be working through making decisions on as appropriate on these different items that we see over the next few weeks. And then when you meet again, we will have a status report two, and hopefully we won't have to go into a long, not many status reports over the next few weeks. So we will see how our world progresses. So, Mr. Chairman and board members, that is the report.
Okay, so my understanding is we need to have the phones unmuted.
Yes, sir. So, Eric, if you'll unmute the phones.
All participants are now in interactive talk mode.
All right. And so at this particular part of the meeting, we move into communication to the board. And this is, again, something that is allowed at every board meeting, except normally we get to see each other. And so at this point, if an individual would like to make a comment, ask a question, they can do so. Because of the fact that if we were together in person, we would be having an individual fill out a form. The guidelines of how the communication to the board works would be on that document. I'm going to go over the approach, the procedures that we use so that an individual will know. And so because this is virtual, not virtual, telephonic, if an individual wishes to speak, they will need to share their name so that we can also make that as a part of the minutes. And our board has already, for all meetings prior and for this one as well, the time limit has been set at 3 minutes. Specific factual information or recitation of existing policies may be furnished in response to inquiries, but the board may not deliberate, discuss, or make any decision on any subject not on the agenda. The board can certainly defer to the administration to answer these questions if appropriate, and in some instances, the request may result in an agenda item for the next meeting. So, Mr. Chairman, you want to request if anybody...
Does anyone have any questions or comments they'd like to make? All right, thank you very much. We'll assume there are none. And so, with authority that's vested into me as chairman, I would declare this meeting adjourned.
And at adjournment, let me also share that this meeting has been recorded as required, and it will be available on the website.
Thank you all for listening. Glad you're here. Take care of yourself. Be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.